The Director of Clinical Training is in. Welcome to the DCT Podcast, your portable meeting with a Director of Clinical Training. I'm Joel Hughes, the DCT for the Clinical Psychology Program at a Midwestern University. This is private social media, so this podcast is not endorsed by my program, department, or university. My views are my own. In this episode, I'm going to talk about common academic experiences that nobody talks about: repeated rejection, imposter syndrome, and burnout, which is a new article in press at Perspectives on Psychological Science by Lisa Jaremka and her colleagues. I will also disambiguate the concept of balance to consider exactly what work-life balance is. Finally, I'm going to climb on the bandwagon of a new approach to understanding work-life balance that I thought I made up, but which is apparently not a new idea. And this is going to be part one of two of our series on balance.
What should I do on the podcast?
Nothing. No co-host on this one.
You'll know it's time to turn the page when you hear the chimes.
Really? None of the listeners are even old enough to remember the read-along books.
Whatever.
So to review, I surveyed our doctoral students at Kent State using the question, when it comes to being a doctoral student in clinical psychology, my biggest question, frustration, struggle, etc. is, and I use that to get the top topics that people would be interested in talking about during the student meetings with the DCT. The top topics were balance, which includes the idea of work-life balance, balancing roles within the program, and self-care, productivity, or time management, writing, and clarity. So on this podcast, we're going to do a deep dive into the issue of balance, and in particular, work-life balance. But first, let me tell you about an article in press that is tangentially relevant to our topic. Based on a symposium at the annual conference of the Society for Personality and Social Psychology, Lisa Jaremka and her colleagues have an article in press in Perspectives on Psychological Science titled Common Academic Experiences No One Talks About, Repeated Rejection, Imposter Syndrome, and Burnout. So, do we experience these things during graduate school, dear listener? What about repeated rejection? Oh yeah, you didn't get into most of the graduate schools to which you applied. Research articles, frequently rejected, sometimes desk rejected, sometimes rejected after having been revised. Pretty much all of the grant applications I submit are rejected, at least at first, and usually forever. And then just even ideas that I have, suggestions that I have, requests that I ask for, lots of rejection. Develop a thick skin, I guess. And then there's the Uber rejection. It was recently reported by Richmond and colleagues in a 2019 article in Scholarship of Teaching and Learning in Psychology titled An Evidence-Based Roadmap for Success, Part 1, The Bumpy Road of Graduate School, that among those doctoral psychologists who want an academic job, 60% do not get an academic job. Wow, talk about rejection. That's the stereotype of the job that you're supposed to be training for when you get your PhD in clinical psychology or health service psychology. Ideally, we think that we're training academics, but now we know that 60% of doctoral psychologists who want to get an academic job don't actually get one at first. So yeah, there's a lot of rejection there too. What about imposter syndrome? That's the idea that you're doubting your accomplishments and have a persistent fear that you're going to be exposed as a fraud. This term was introduced in the 1978 article, The Imposter Phenomenon in High Achieving Women, but it turns out that imposter syndrome is very common and it's experienced equally by men and women. So what do you think? Could imposter syndrome contribute to work-life imbalance if you feel you have something to prove and that you're not good enough? And then burnout. According to the World Health Organization, occupational burnout is a syndrome linked to long-term unresolved work-related stress. And in graduate school in psychology, that's pretty much work. One of the themes of the podcast is that your professional life is your school, your work. It's all the same now. Once you're in graduate school, this is your job. Anyway, burnout is characterized by feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, increased mental distance from your job, feeling negative and cynical about your job, and being less efficient in your profession. And it has to be in the professional context. It doesn't count if it's outside in other areas of life. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that graduate students in health service psychology could certainly suffer from repeated rejection, imposter syndrome, and burnout. and that these may be related to work-life imbalance, which is the topic of today's podcast. I guess the worst possible outcome of imposter syndrome or burnout would be quitting graduate school, and we'll get to that in a minute. But back to the idea of the symposium at the Society for Personality and Social Psychology, it sounds like talking about it is good for you. Maybe that's exposure, to get it out and talk about these negative experiences that most people won't talk about, and you find out that they're common to all. But I'm going to draw the distinction between recreational complaining and articulating your feelings, which are good, and cynical hostility or anti-gratitude, which is not good. So I'm a champion of recreational complaining so long as it stays recreational. And it sounds like that's what they were trying to do. And in fact, they may not have even been complaining. They may have just been articulating their feelings, which is a little bit like an exposure therapy, and that sounds great to me. But what about quitting graduate school? The worst outcome of burnout or imposter syndrome or repeated rejection would be dropping out of doctoral education altogether. And here, I cannot believe that I'm going to be able to recycle something that I wrote in the APA self-study. I'm just going to read it to you. As you know, health service psychology does not have an attrition problem compared to PhD programs in other fields. The PhD Completion Project reported that the completion rate 10 years after students began their doctoral training was only 56.6%. Completion rates were 56% in the social sciences, and 1 in 4 PhD students in the sciences leave their graduate program within the first 3 years due to losing interest, pursuing a different direction, becoming discouraged about academics, and other reasons. An attrition rate of 40% or higher has been widely reported, such as by the Council of Graduate Schools. In contrast, the attrition rate for doctoral education in psychology is about 4%. And a recent analysis of attrition in health service psychology based on population data, based on all the graduate students in health service psychology, revealed an attrition rate of approximately 5%. So the attrition rate is much lower in health service psychology than it is in doctoral education overall. So although students in health service psychology have a much lower attrition rate and don't drop out or quit graduate school, they may be experiencing burnout in the form of problems with work-life balance. Here's a quote from that article by Jaremka et al. That's in press that we were talking about. "I also felt an intense pressure to succeed, which further fueled the imbalance I was experiencing between work and the rest of my life." And that's by Lisa Jaremka herself, the lead author. So apparently, burnout, imposter complex, rejection is all construed sometimes as a work-life imbalance. And the term work-life balance was first used in the late 70s and 1980s to describe the balance that a working person needs between the time that they're at work and the other aspects of their life. And that would include their personal interests, their hobbies, their family, their social life, their leisure time activities. This is a very popular topic. If you Google work-life balance, you're going to get hundreds of thousands of hits. There's 27 TED Talks on work-life balance, and the one by Nigel Marsh has 4.5 million views. But is there anything in the literature? What about anything for health service psychology graduate students? Well, chapters 6 and 7 in Prinstein's The Portable Mentor, Expert Guide to a Successful Career in Psychology, both of those chapters are about work-life balance. And they have fairly typical approaches to discussing work-life balance, in which is defined largely by balancing being a psychologist with having a family. But neither of those chapters really addresses the idea of balance during graduate school. Fortunately, there was an article in 2012 titled "Stress Coping and Barriers to Wellness Among Psychology Graduate Students." And here's a quote: "Over 70% of graduate students in psychology reported a stressor that interfered with their optimal functioning. Frequently endorsed stressors included academic responsibilities, finances or debt, anxiety, and poor work/school-life balance." So work-life balance is one of the top stressors that graduate students in psychology report. Another quote from the article that I might put in the show notes: "Common coping strategies used were support from friends, family, classmates, regular exercise, and hobbies. The leading barriers to using wellness strategies were lack of time and cost or money." So it sounds like people try to cope with work-life imbalance using social support, exercise, and hobbies. Well, I'm going to have a different suggestion or at least an expanded suggestion? Well, many have said that work-life balance is actually a myth. It's an aspirational state that we struggle to attain but never quite reach. I mean, when you think about it, how can you cleanly separate vocation from your personal life in the 21st century where everything is permanently connected? Some people sleep with their iPhone. The minute you wake up in the morning, you're checking your work email because your work email and your personal email are the same email. I wonder if it's time to move past work-life balance into some other concept that would be more helpful for graduate students in health service psychology. And is there any evidence that we can discard this aspirational notion of achieving work-life balance and do something else instead? An article from 2018 titled "The Jingle Jangle of Work-Non-Work Balance, a Comprehensive and Meta-Analytic Review of Its Meaning and Measurement" in the Journal of Applied Psychology reminded us of the jingle jangle fallacy. What's that, you ask? The jingle fallacy, which goes all the way back to Thorndike in 1904 in his textbook An Introduction to the Theory of Mental and Social Measurements, the jingle fallacy is thinking that different constructs are the same because they have the same name. In contrast, the jangle fallacy is using different labels for the same thing. So when you think about it, social support. You may have several measures of social support, but they could be completely different things. In some social support measures, being married counts as social support. In some measures, instrumental social support, which is to say practical help that you can receive from people, defines social support. And in other measures, perceived social support, or a sense of feeling connected and feeling emotionally supported, is social support. So they all have the same name, but they could be different constructs. They may be related, but they're not exactly the same. Well, that's the jingle fallacy. What about the jangle fallacy? That's where you use different labels for the for a single construct. If you had self-efficacy and behavior confidence as two different scales, those might be different labels, but they're pretty much the same thing because self-efficacy is your confidence in your ability to enact a behavior. And so what does the jingle-jangle fallacy have to do with work-life balance? Well, Casper et al. Identified 233 conceptual definitions in the literature, and these clustered into a number of distinct interpretable types. Oh, no. Well, I don't want to get into the weeds of their methodology or their comprehensive meta-analytic review. Let's just skip right to their new definition. Their new definition is employees' evaluation of the favorability of their combination of work and non-work roles, arising from the degree to which their affective experiences and their perceived involvement and effectiveness in work and non-work roles are commensurate with the value that they attach to these roles. Okay, that's a mouthful, and I'm going to reword it to fit the life of a graduate student in health service psychology. So psychology graduate students' evaluation of the favorability of their combination of their professional and personal roles arising from the degree to which their affective experiences and their perceived involvement and effectiveness in their profession and personal roles are commensurate with the value they attach to these roles. That'll be work-life balance. So what does it involve? It involves how well your professional and personal roles combine. And that's going to be an important concept for what I thought was a new idea that's just recycled from other people. So how well the roles combine. Also, it involves how involved, effective, and stressed out people are in these roles. And finally, whether or not people are able to live in accordance with their values. So right there, we get a clue for something actionable that we can do to improve work-life balance. So with that new definition of work-life balance, that talks about combining roles, satisfaction with roles, effectiveness of roles, and living according to your values, I'd like to suggest that we move past work-life balance and instead start talking about work-life synergy. And a Google search reveals that everyone else is also writing about synergy. And so look up work-life synergy and you'll see that I must have accidentally stolen that from the interwebs or something. Although it turns out that there's nothing on synergy for psychology graduate students yet. So what is synergy? According to the dictionary.com definition, synergy is the interaction of elements that, when combined, produce a total effect that is greater than the sum of the individual elements. What does that mean? Can you combine your vocation, which is to say your educational pursuits, your academics, your work, and your non-work life, which is to say your personal life, to improve your effectiveness and quality of both. In other words, does this have to be a zero-sum game? Does it have to be a balancing act? Are you walking a balance beam in which there's a trade-off, and if you make a mistake, you're going to fall one direction or the other? I don't think so. We'll come back to the synergy concept in a minute. But first, what might help improve work-life imbalance? Remember the opening anecdote? The reason that this symposium evolved into a journal article is because it was such a cathartic experience for the social psychologists to just talk about these common experiences of rejection, imposter syndrome, and burnout. Apparently, tears were shed at the symposium session. Do you cry at conferences? I didn't think so. Well, that's enough for now. We'll have to continue this discussion in part two of the podcast on balance. In that episode, I'll tell you my autobiography of work-life imbalance, and we'll start getting into the practical suggestions for things you can do to improve your work-life balance. Thanks for listening to the DCT podcast. If you want to contact me, email me at jhughes1@kent.edu. More disclaimer, the podcast does not establish a supervisory relationship, blah, blah, blah. Disclaimer, my views are my own. Disclaimer. If my views contradict those of your DCT or your advisor, you can ignore me. Remember, not all DCTs are your DCT. If you enjoyed the show, rate it on iTunes or Spotify, and don't tell your friends, unless they're graduate students in health service psychology.